Hey guys, coming up today on Sports Spectrum, a little bonus episode. Who doesn't love bonus episodes, right? Well, this is a conversation that took place a couple weeks ago on one of our sister podcasts, the Sports Spectrum Transformed podcast with Jade McCarthy. You might know Jade. She was a former ESPN Sports Center anchor and is now working with us here at Sports Spectrum. She's had her show out for a while. I hope you've been listening or had a chance to listen to it. Lots of great conversations a couple times a month with people in and around the world of sports talking about their transformed stories, their transformation journey. And one of the more recent conversations that Jade had was with Tom Crean, longtime college basketball coach. He was with Marquette and went to the Final Four, and he coached Dwayne Wade. He was with Indiana and he was with Georgia. 403 career wins as a Division I head coach, took his team to the Final Four back in 2003, Big Ten Coach of the Year in 2016. The accolades are there, right? He's also an analyst on ESPN doing college basketball work. And just listening to Tom Crean, I've heard him over the years talk about leadership. And when he and Jade got together to be able to talk about leadership from a biblical perspective, wow, I was all in. I got my pen and my paper out. And I think you guys are going to want to hear this conversation and get that pen and paper out as well. So let's get to it. Tom Crean joining Jade McCarthy here on a bonus episode of Sports Spectrum's podcast. Take a listen.
Hey friends, welcome into Transformed. Always wonderful to have you here with us. And I'm really excited about our guest today. He is a former National Coach of the Year, a former Big Ten Coach of the Year. He's had multiple stops and hoops is his game. But I have to tell you, I know he has not just a deep love for football, but a deep knowledge for football as well. And I've had a chance to experience that firsthand as we've both been involved with the NFL site, the 33rd team. So I've seen his insatiable curiosity about leadership. And I think we can fairly say that's a curiosity that he and I share, as is, of course, our love for Jesus. So it is great to have Tom Crean here with us on Transform. Tom, great to have you here. Thanks for making the time.
Thank you, Jade. It's great to be here, and I've been looking forward to it. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
There's so many different ways that I feel like I could start this conversation, and as I was thinking about that, I was going basketball, football, faith. Like, there's just so many different avenues. So I'm going to dive in just with the idea of being transformed and what that has meant to you over the course of your coaching career and your life overall.
Well, I think it's constantly ongoing. I think. I could point to moments this past week with being in Memphis at the NCAA Basketball Academy and being around so many people that everyone's different, comes from different backgrounds, but they had there was a shared mindset. We were like-minded, so to speak, right, with what you're looking at. And I think anytime you get around that and you have something that opens your eyes, it does transform you. Mm-hmm. And it's so important in this world. I learned a long time ago that when I first took over at Indiana, a gentleman that was really, really smart, he was the president of a community college, and he made a point. He said, transactional leadership takes a lot less time, and maybe you could get it turned in 3 to 4 years. But if you're looking for transformational leadership and to transform a program, that takes much longer. And that really hit me. I kept a letter up in my office for a long time. Now, the way society has gone, the way the world is, that time frame may not be as realistic. But I think if you really put transforming yourself and how you transform others by what seed you plant, how you try to help them, how you try to nurture them, the encouragement that you give them, the energy and enthusiasm that you try to show them, then I think transformation is ongoing. And I think that's what we're all really trying to shoot for. Just so many times we get caught in this immediacy, this recency bias, this transactional relationships that we're all in, that you just lose sight of how important it is that if you're going to change and help change other people in leadership, you better really start with yourself first and foremost, and that better be an ongoing daily basis.
Yeah, and I think your point there about how challenging it is, like if you want the quick fix, it's transactional, but it's not going to be lasting. And just that recognition that for it to be transformative, it almost inherently means it's going to be hard. Like you're going to have to put yourself through a greater challenge, or the people around you who, you know, probably all of you through a greater challenge to actually make that lasting transformation.
I think you're right. I heard a long time ago, I went to see Doug Collins coach the Detroit Pistons, and it was training camp. And he said so many great things that I wrote, and I remember a lot of it, but one that just absolutely probably pierced me and made it a big part of how I viewed coaching. And he said, change is painful, change is hard, but change is worth it. Mm. And he said that to his team in training camp. And when you really think about it, I mean, it really is. But so many things that you want to get accomplished. And this is what happens when you're coaching, especially as time goes on. And people will always say, you know, if kids change, their parents changed, you know, all this is changing. I think the biggest thing that changes is our expectations for people change. Sure. We lessen them. And it's not about you having to reach a certain expectation, wins, loss, points, touchdowns, you know, whatever it is. It's that expectation of what's expected of you to do more, to sacrifice, to deal with adversity, to have responsibility. And I think that is, I think it is really, really hard. And I think if you're going to change, first off, there's a couple things like that go into coaching. One thing that I really learned to view as and how I saw players and how I saw building them and helping them get better was it's really not about no. It's really easy to say no. And a lot of times the people that say no, they don't have a better idea. They don't have a better plan. So no becomes really easy. Mm. It's more not yet. And that means that we're moving towards something. We're improving. We're trying to get better at it. Three-point shooting. You may not be a good three-point shooter right now. So no, we're not going to shoot those in the game. But right now we're going to really, really, every day, we're going to work on getting better in those and individual improvement workouts in practice. We're going to really focus on making you better. So at some point in time, that becomes something that you can do in a game. See, to me, that's a much clearer, better way with more enthusiasm, more energy, and more potential for growth than just saying no. And to me, that's the biggest thing. And if you have a plan for what makes change better, okay, that kind of, it doesn't always change the level of pain or how long the pain's going to be there, but sometimes it lessens the blow mentally to how you get through it because you know you are trying to achieve something and get somewhere. And those are the expectations that we've got to continue to have for ourselves, just like we've got to have for our players, for our children, you know, whatever it is. I mean, it's okay to want to see people be successful and to teach them and hold them accountable to how that happens.
Mm. Tom Crane joining us here on Sports Spectrum's Transformed. Coach, I wonder, you bring in kids, obviously, and so many kids in our culture, right? Like they want to be the star. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just, I think that's kind of inherently how so many of us are born, right? But our culture has sort of propelled that idea. Yet we all see teams that really succeed are the ones that serve each other along the way. And then as a group, they succeed together. So how do you teach that? How do you coach that?
It all starts with to me, it starts with a vision for the player. And every time I've made a mistake in recruiting or in that is I didn't trust my vision. And there's sometimes you may not have it when you're in recruiting and you may not feel it instinctively. And you have to be honest about that. The more you try to talk yourself into a vision for someone, the less opportunity there really is going to be for you to help them achieve it because you don't really believe it. And I think the bottom line is my belief for where someone could go as a player had to far exceed someone's reality of where they were at. Okay, because their reality may be they're really right there. They're great. Their reality may be in many cases with guys we've recruited, they can't achieve that. But if you have a vision for it and you keep working constantly to provide the energy for that, to get them to understand it, to hold them accountable to it, to have a plan every day for them to get it. Okay, that's where it starts. But part of that vision, and you have to teach them, because in many, many cases, they don't understand this. It's part of that vision totally involves them becoming a great teammate. And I think the more that you get into an individual view of what a player needs to have, what a person needs to have to be successful, the more you've got to get them to understand what their teammates need to have to be successful. Because it really, I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, look at golf. It's an individual sport, but not if you want to make the Ryder Cup. Okay. I mean, look at tennis. Tennis is an individual sport unless you want to win a doubles championship. I mean, you can go right on down the line. There's very, very few things where you can just totally lock into yourself, okay, and be rewarded for it successfully. There are those situations, but it's very, very minute, and it's very, very hard to get. Most things are going to involve two or more people, three or more people. It's going to be a team. And if I'm not concerned about how well my teammates succeed, if I'm not concerned about my teammates being able to achieve what they want, if I'm not concerned about my teammates getting better, and if I'm not consumed with being the best teammate that I can possibly be, I'm going to hit a wall or I'm going to hit a ceiling. Okay. My potential for growth is going to stall at some point, because that's where your talent is never going to be enough if you do not care about your teammate. And if you love to be successful, but you A, don't want to be around other successful people, or B, most importantly, see other people be successful. Yeah. You can want success all you want. It's a very selfish, self-centered, and sometimes lucrative, but not that often, a very selfish, self-centered, and lack of self-awareness life. I don't want to be that. I don't want to be around people like that. And I sure as heck don't want to be responsible for helping somebody be trained up in that way.
Sure, sure. And those are lessons that, you know, transcend sports. I mean, those are lessons in business. Mm-hmm. Those are lessons in family. Like, those are lessons just in life overall, because I think, you know, a rising tide does raise all ships. And Sure. Ultimately, like, that's what I want to be. I'm sure that's what you want to be. And that's what we want our children and our spouse and our teammates and those that we coach, everybody around us. Like, that's what we're hoping to instill in people. And so much of that is biblical, right? I mean, mm-hmm. You look at the way Jesus came, and who he served, and the fact that he did serve, right? I mean, sure. I would imagine, like, those are all principles and tenets that you have leaned on throughout the course of your life.
Oh, numerous. I mean, there's not any part of the day that I'm not extremely grateful that I had a mother and a father, and especially my mom, as time went on, that she made sure we were in church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. We were there. My mother worked for, she was the secretary and treasurer of our church. And the pastor also had a marble company, U.S. Marble Company. I can still, every time I get around fresh marble and a building, it just brings back all those memories of going to work with her back in Mount Pleasant, Michigan. And she was also the secretary and treasurer of that company. So we were around it constantly. And there's so many things. And you're so right. Like, I'll give you a great example is this. This has helped me so much, not only in coaching players, but in trying to help build teams, but also build attendance. And like at Marquette, we walked in and it was 6,700 fans the first year. 9 years later, we're at 16,453. Yeah. We had to turn it around at Indiana after everything that we had gone through. Georgia, the first 2 years, we set the attendance record. And it goes back to me in this, where everyone matters. You know, the 99 sheep were there, but the shepherd had to go get the other one. He had to go find the other sheep, because there was going to be rejoicing with that other sheep, you know, when that last sheep was found. And that to me is the, just that they hit you square in the head that everyone matters. God put every one of us in here to matter. All different circumstances, all different realities of what we go through. But the one true reality is he created every one of us to get to heaven, and every one of us deserve an opportunity to get to heaven. And I think about that all the time. It was never about groupthink. It was never about filling an arena with this group or that group. It was about every individual coming in, having something for them that made them want to come back, but that made them feel that they are an absolute part of what we're doing. And then you just, you have the same thing with your players, because really it doesn't matter if they're a starter, a star, a walk-on, somebody in the middle, if they're on your team, okay, they are, and they get in the game. If they can help you lose the game, they've got to be able to help you win the game. Right. And so they deserve that. And I've had numerous walk-ons. Were they all happy? Probably not, because they were driven and pushed in many, many cases, like the starters and the stars on the team. But the one thing we never did is we never ignored their improvement. And I look at that like there was always going to be more time spent with the walk-ons to get them as good as they can possibly be, and not just limit our time to the people that were doing the highest frequency of scoring or rebounding or assisting or playing time. Everybody on the team matters. And I learned a long time ago, and I think this goes back to John the Baptist, who was maybe, if I had to pick one character that a person from the Bible that anytime that name comes up, or anytime there's something about him in the Bible that just perks you up. We had a priest right after we, because my wife is Catholic. We raised our kids Catholic. I was born and raised into Assembly of God. And so, but what I've learned over this period of time is no matter where you are, God is there with you. And it doesn't really matter to me what church you're in, because God is there with you. He's in your heart. He's there walking down the street, right?
Amen.
But there was a minister. It was the day after we beat Kentucky in what was one of the greatest wins in Indiana history, certainly one of mine. They were number one in the country. Young man named Christian Watford hit a 3-point shot at the buzzer that got us the win on ESPN. Well, the next day we're in church, and I have these notes still. And Father Stan, who recently just passed away, unfortunately, I think he was on a hiking trip and he passed away. But he said, John the Baptist was annoying. And it got my attention because he led off the sermon with that. John the Baptist was annoying. He was never going to let you think that the wrong way was the right way. And he was leading people to Jesus. He was leading people to the coming. And to me, like, so much of that is leadership. It's not about being popular in your leadership. It's not about being politically correct all the time in your leadership. Certainly you want to be tactful, but it's not even about that. It's about telling the truth. It's about preparation. It's about getting your attention. It's about in a film session, in a meeting with a player, to get their attention, you have to pierce them, mm-hmm. not in a physical way at all, but you have to you have to hit them in a way that they're going to respond to this. You got their attention. They didn't want to hear it, but they needed to hear it. I always preached with coaches, don't be the office that all the players want to come into. Because that means when they need to come in there, when they need to come in there, or they need to make that phone call, and there's no choice, they're probably not going to call you. Don't be the office where everybody gets to feel like everything's okay. And you get, I always called it a cleansing. You know, don't go where they're just going to cleanse. Go where they know they're going to hear the truth. So when they have nowhere else to turn, you're the first number that they call. And I think that's so important. I would imagine John Baptist would have been an unbelievable associate head coach in sports who swept the floors before practice started every day, right? And cleaned the locker room and picked up trash behind him to make sure that the head coach had everything that he needed and make sure that all the players knew what was expected of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Expected, right? I mean, because He laid the foundation. He laid the groundwork for Jesus to come and do what he needed to do for all of us.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what you need your assistants to do, right? Like, and that's what you need the people who are alongside you in life to do. So you have to be thoughtful in picking those people, right? I mean, I'm sure you've thought about that as a father. Right. Like Absolutely. Making sure the people who are alongside are laying the foundation to help your children.
Oh, there's no question, especially in this day and age, because I think in coaching, this is a big, big thing. It's somewhat probably there in football, but I think it's much harder than it is in basketball. I think you get weeded out much quicker in football if you want the title and you want the responsibility, but you want no part of the accountability.
Yeah.
You want no part of the direction that comes from the head coach. Or you want to be in charge of this, but you don't want to listen to the coordinator. Now, in basketball, it's a problem. It's a real problem. And that's the truth. There's too many people that they want to be the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, the recruiting coordinator. They want those things. Okay, but they don't want to have to be accountable when it's not going right. They don't want to have to be accountable for the change. And I've always said forever, and I learned this a long, long time ago working for Ralph Willard and working for Tom Izzo, is an assistant coach, there's all kinds of hats that you have to wear. Okay, there's all kinds of hats. The head coach has a lot of hats he has to wear. The head coach cannot take those hats, you know, those proverbial hats, stick them under the desk, stick them in a desk drawer, file them away, and forget about them. The head coach has to see those hats at all times, even when he's not wearing them. And somebody has to be responsible for those hats. Well, I didn't want the assistant coach, and I sure didn't want to be an assistant coach that thought I was going to put those hats in the drawer and not worry about it anyways. And I went through some hard days learning that. That's not something you automatically have. But I thank God that I've been around the people in my coaching life, going back to when I was coaching in high school and Division III at Alma College before I ever got into Division I with Ted McIntyre, Denny Kuiper, and Ralph Pym at Alma College, and then going and being a graduate assistant for Judd Heathcote, working 5 years for Ralph Willard, working 4 years for Tom Izzo. It as tough as those days were, I wouldn't trade them for anything, because I had to learn accountability. And it's not like we walk in, I'm 57. I don't walk out of any day thinking that it was the most perfect day it could be, because you're always going to make mistakes. When you're coming up as a coach, you're going to make a lot of mistakes. But if you're not willing and you don't have the humility to learn from them, to accept them, to take them personal in a way that makes it better for everybody else because you changed, not take it personal in a way that you clam up and you can't do anything about it. That's what I wanted to be. And that's what I've had no problem trying to challenge my coaches and the people on the staff to be. And that means there's some really hard days. But at the end of the day, if you do it out of care, if you do it out of love, if you do it out of wanting to see your players, your coaches, your staff become great, then you can deal with it. And there's been many times I've had to apologize for my actions. There's no question that I've changed over a period of time. And that's part of growth. That's part of transforming yourself. But you better have a real desire to help people be the best they can be if you want to be successful yourself.
Yeah. No, 100%. I mean, I think that you have to have that collective vision that you talked about earlier. And that has to be a driving force, right? When the days are hard, when they're long, when you're tired, like all those things. Absolutely. Because if you can't fall back on that, you're never going to be able to lead the people around you to move through all the hard.
Absolutely. Because I mean, think of, you know, let's go back to the Bible, right? You know, we know about Jesus until the age 12. Then we don't know about him until the age 30, right? And everything that he did from 30 to 33. Can you even possibly imagine somebody with more pure energy than what he had? And I mean, when you read every story in the Bible, and there's very, very little. I don't know all the verses that talk about how much Jesus rested, right? And got a nap, you know, here and there on the boat, you know, but a lot of that time, that free time when people were sleeping, he was praying, right? And right. The bottom line is, like, as a leader, your energy has got to drive the train. It doesn't matter. And if it doesn't, you know what? If it doesn't, you're not going to be successful as you could possibly be. You may be to a degree, but again, it's your own ceiling is going to be lowered, or it's going to hit a spot. But here's the biggest thing. And I learned this in the first 3 years more than ever when we were at Indiana and we were trying to rebuild that program. And we had so many things going on that were detrimental and that were adverse. I learned more than ever, you have got to surround yourself with energy. Mm. No matter how much energy you have, if you don't have people that bring you energy, there's no chance. I talk about this with my brother-in-laws, with other coaching friends of mine, when hiring thing comes up. There's not a much bigger thing. Certainly competence, experience, trustworthiness, communication skills, all those things are monumental to success. But if you don't have somebody that brings you energy, how are they going to bring your team energy in the middle of the season? Because if you don't have somebody that brings you energy, something's going to happen when you hit that three-game losing streak. And when you hit that three-game losing streak and you've got people that are around you during that, those were the right hires. It's not about who helps you through the three-game winning streak.
No.
Because everybody's happy through that. When you've got somebody that you can count on through the three-game losing streak, because you learn a lot about somebody and that week or that 2 weeks. And it's so important that you feel that, right? And sometimes it's instinctive. Sometimes it's by observing, you know. But the most of the time, you've just got to ask God, please help me find what we really need so I can bring the best out of this person and this entire team, because they are willing to help bring the best out of me.
Out of me. Yeah.
And that's and that's crucial. That's a team. That's a two-way street. And and if you've got a bunch of two-way streets in your program, you have a lot of chance for success. If you have a lot of one-way streets in your program, you're going to hit a wall and you're never going to reach your potential.
Yeah. It's a dead end. It's a dead end. But I love really that. Is. I mean, you need people who are going to fill you with energy, right? It's, you know, I think of John Gordon, right? And like energy vampires, like you need to avoid the energy vampires. You need to find the people who are going to fill your bucket, you know, to use another analogy that we sometimes hear. How have you learned how to best do that yourself, Tom?
Asking for forgiveness and asking for discernment and asking for improvement, I think, when I've made those mistakes. Mm. Because one of the greatest things I ever heard about leadership was from General Hal Moore. And he's passed away now, but Mel Gibson played him in a movie. You know, we were soldiers, tremendous military leader, one of the most decorated there is. If you go to West Point, ask anybody in military, they know who General Moore is. And I was very, very fortunate to be around him, develop a friendship with him, speak at different events with him. And he had so many great things about leadership. Okay. Three strikes and you're not out. There's always something you can do to influence the outcome in your favor. And then another thing, and then another thing. And he had all these different things that made so much sense. When there's nothing wrong, except there's nothing wrong. That's when a leader has got to be his most attentive. So many things, no room for second place trophies, but the best one was this: trust your instincts.
Yeah.
And then Tony La Russa took it another step. Instincts are an informed feel. And I was very, very fortunate early in my head coaching career to learn those and to really try to ingest those and apply them. And when I've gotten away from that, especially that informed feel, when you've experienced it and you try to talk yourself into something or talk yourself out of something or whatever it is, those are tough. And you just learn. You just learn over a period of time. You've got to feel it. I think it's very, very hard to take phone calls from people that are recommending somebody that they don't truly know you.
Sure.
And every time I've gotten away from having somebody that was working for me, that it either worked with that person or truly knew that person, or somebody that I knew was really invested not only in me as a person, but they cared about me and my family. You know, they knew me for more than just, they knew me for more than that. Right. And because it's really easy. People mean well, but they also have an agenda. They want to help people. And I think you have to be so careful. That's when a leader has to pray, trust the Bible, trust their instincts as much as anything else. When you're making decisions, whether it's recruiting, whether it's hiring, whether it's a job you're going to take, because it's really, really hard. We trick ourselves. Hmm. We absolutely do. The world tricks us.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean we're going to be wrong every time. I'm not saying that at all. But you need that spiritual guidance where you feel that peace.
Yeah, the peace. I was going to say that peace about it.
Yeah, and it's like the UFO. You know, you saw something. You're not sure what it was, but you know you saw something. Even if you were the only one that saw it, you know you saw it, right? And it's like peace, right? Like, it's like you may not be able to explain it to everybody else.
Yeah.
It's like when you hear from God, you can't necessarily tell everybody what you did. And in so many cases, people... Well, I don't really get that. You know what? When you feel it and hear it, you know it.
Yes.
And it just changes you, right? And it's not about advertising it to the world. It's about living it out yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where I've come. I really try to study body language. I try to observe when people don't think I'm observing. And I think the older you get in coaching, the more you get into your world, especially when you're a head coach, the easier it is to lose sight of that, the easier it is to trust people that aren't implicitly connected to you. And you have to really, really connected to you, you know, emotionally, as well as they know you as that coach that I said. But to me, it's like anybody can be who they want to be and want you to see them be for just about 2 months, right? Give or take. And once we get into month three and four, now we start to see what it really is. Well, a lot of times you've already made that decision.
Sure.
And that's where that prayer, that's where that guidance, and anybody that thinks that's nonsensical has not utilized it, right? It's very sensible. We are not capable of making every decision ourselves. It's going to be absolutely profound and great. We need that spiritual guidance. You know, just like every home needs a spiritual leader. And it isn't always who everybody thinks it's going to be. Mm-hmm. It's not a blueprint of, well, this is the spiritual leadership of the home. You know, we like to think it is, but it's not. Right. You're always raising leaders. And in my mind, you're always raising people and helping them or build on the people that have already raised them to be the spiritual leaders of their home someday. Mm-hmm. And you have to go through a lot of hard days to get to that place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nope. Never promised it would be easy, right?
Exactly.
And never promised.
But again, it's all in your approach. And it's all in if you let, especially in coaching, And right now, really for any leadership, and it really I see this. I read a lot about pastors. I love studying pastor leadership. I love studying pastoral upbringings, you know, and all the things that they go through. And a lot of times for pastors, as hard as it may be for us as coaches, and as hard as it is for people in sports or television or things like that, think about what the pastors are going through. They are absolutely committed and have to be committed getting those souls into heaven.
Yeah.
You know, we have those responsibilities in our family. When you take over a church, you have that responsibility for your congregation. Right. And I'm not a pastor, right? I've never been a pastor. I've never been to Bible college, right? But I have an unbelievable empathy for them because that's what drives them. And I think what happens is every time we let the nonsense, the problems that we see in life, the quandary that we might be in, the challenges that we have, every time those override our love for what we're doing, or our love for God, okay, or our love for the passion that we have and what we're committed to, we're giving into it. Because every chance that adversity and negativity has to take your spirit, or to take doubt, create doubt, I should say, it's going to do it, right? It's going to do it. And we have to fight it all the time in our own lives, and you have to be able to help people get through it. Because once you lose your spirit, once doubt's created, it's really hard to see the bright side. It's really hard to see the love for what you do. Maybe love, it may not be the right word, the passion for what you do, right? For what really drives you. And I think as leaders, we have to be concerned about that with each other, and because we certainly have to be concerned about it with our team. Because if we're not going to be concerned about it for our team and concerned about it for each other, who's going to help us? And that's where your spiritual guidance and trusting the Bible and trusting your upbringing and experience. And if you're new to God and if you're new to the Bible, diving in and getting that energy from it, right? And anybody that doesn't feel a dose of energy when they've read that special verse that you just turned to, or read a chapter in the Bible, or read about the successes and think about all the people that their sacrifices did not end well for them. John the Baptist.
Sure.
Paul. I mean, let's go right on down the line.
The list. It's a long
one. Yeah. I mean, but you know what they did? They impacted, and we weren't there, obviously, but they impacted so many people. And that's why the Bible is full of some of the greatest. I have trouble, and I know I use this term myself, I have trouble calling it, you know, the Bible characters. No, those are Bible leaders. Those are leaders, spiritual leaders that set the tone for every one of us sure. to be able to learn from and get energy from.
Yeah, yeah. That's a soundtrack worth putting on repeat. And I know I'll do that. And I hope our listeners here will do the same. Coach Tom Crean, thanks so much for making the time and being with us on Transformed. This has really been a privilege.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it, Jade. I love what you do. I love your work. Keep doing it. It's fantastic.
And again, thank you to Jade McCarthy and Tom Crean. That episode originally aired on the Transformed Podcast. Want to encourage you to subscribe and follow the Transformed Podcast with Sports Spectrum on the Sports Spectrum Podcast Network. You can do it on Spotify or Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. Jade releases 2 interviews a month, and they're really, really good conversations. And Jade's such a pro. As I've mentioned before, you know, it's just wonderful to have her on the team, being someone who was with ESPN for so many years and now being able to take those talents and contribute to the mission of Sports Spectrum is just awesome. So I'm glad to have Jade on board, and definitely want to encourage you guys, go listen to the Sports Spectrum Transformed Podcast with Jade McCarthy. We appreciate you tuning in. We'll see you on Monday with a brand new episode of the Sports Spectrum Podcast. I hope you all have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you soon.